Hello, everyone. My name is Dana Al-Hanbali, and this is Something to Consider. I don't know where to start. Do I start with October 7th? Or should I fast forward to today when the death toll in Palestine has reached over 18,000 lives? A number that by the time you watch this is probably outdated. Or should I start with the 1.9 out of 2.2 million residents of Gaza that have been forcibly displaced from their homes, had their families shot, murdered, or taken away? Should I start with the families that were hiding out in spaces like schools, hospitals, or churches, seeking refuge after losing their homes from the endless carpet bombing for weeks on end, only to be killed by white phosphorus bombs? Bombs whose usage constitute a war crime and are illegal under international humanitarian law. Do I start with the fact that over 70% of the deaths in Gaza are women and children? That there are over 10,000 little babies and children that have either been left to die in hospitals due to lack of oxygen for their incubators, bombs, or more recently, being bulldozed and buried alive by Israeli occupation forces? Over 500,000 children have been left homeless, at least 25,000 of which are orphans. Children that are being dug out from under the rubble of destroyed multi-story homes and buildings. Let me repeat that. Children that are currently buried under the rubble of homes, schools, hospitals, historic churches, and mosques that have been bombed to the degree where there are still children trapped under the dust and rubble of these buildings that are having to be dug out by men who use tools like the light on their phones and their bare hands to find them. Men that do not receive praise for their bravery while mourning what they have lost and how they continuously are risking their own lives trying to dig people out of the rubble, protect the children of strangers that they find in the street, and somehow help communities survive in the midst of what many have referred to as hell on earth. Do I start with the hundreds of trucks stuck at the Rafah border, where their entry into Gaza is controlled and inspected by Israeli forces, and currently not being allowed into Gaza to bring in things like fuel, food, water, medical supplies, basic necessities for survival? No, sorry, I take that back. There were a few trucks that were let in at some point, which included medicine and a pile of body bags and coffins. To quote one of the many delusions of Western leadership, the reopening of the Rafah crossing into Gaza is a testament to the power of diplomacy. Do I begin with the justifications of this quote-unquote war from Western media and leadership? Do I begin with the genocidal undertones of the horrific content to come from Israeli content creators mocking grieving Muslim mothers? Do I begin with the three-day debate of whether Al Ahli Hospital was truly bombed by Israel? After tweets surfaced of them warning that they would do it, and then tweeting that they actually did do it. But somehow, after deleting that tweet, it suddenly wasn't them who did it. But over 20 bombed hospitals and healthcare facilities later, they're ready to claim that, because that those they did. Do I start with the image of the father carrying literal remains of his child's limbs in plastic bags following the bombing, trying to find someone to help him? Do I start with the communication blackouts, where a mass outage of phone and internet lines get cut, leaving more than 2 million Palestinians virtually cut off from the outside world and from one another as the occupier continues to bomb them into the night? Or should I start with the image that has been ingrained in our minds of the man with the beard and the turban? An image that Hollywood and Western media have actively spent decades conditioning the world to believe should evoke fear, incite hate, and drive prejudice. This man, Khalid Nabhan, the grandfather clinging to the lifeless body of his three-year-old granddaughter Reem, the soul of his soul, Ruh Ruh, kissing her eyes as he lays her in a body bag to put her to rest alongside his other grandchild, five-year-old Tariq, both of whom were murdered in an Israeli airstrike. What makes so much of what I have just said so difficult is that so many of us probably know every single one of these references in some context, whether it be an image, video, or headline. And if that in itself, as a reality, does not make your skin crawl or make you question the state of our current reality, I honestly don't know what will. What's happened and has continued to happen to this day is nothing short of a catastrophe. It is a disaster, proof of the failure of humanity. It is absolutely and categorically an example of what is wrong with our world. A prime example of how inhumane, how cruel, and how blind people can and have become. And contrary to what media will have you believe about the position of Muslims or anyone from the Middle East region for that matter, we are not a violent, faceless people who advocate for the murder of anyone. That is not what I represent. That is not what my religion represents. That is not how I was raised. However, there is something incredibly dangerous about what happened. And it is that October 7th wasn't and isn't an isolated incident. It's just the one that most of the world decided is worthy of responding to. It was one event that has now become the catalyst that has awakened everyone to the reality of what has been happening for over 75 years. 75 years of murder, kidnapping, apartheid, displacement, theft, and ethnic cleansing. A reality that, for some odd reason, isn't as worthy of the same outrage. Because it never got the same headlines. It never got the same coverage, nor did it get the same call for justice. What it did do, though, was provide us with a painfully clear message that to the world, there are people that are worthy of justice and others that are not. Both people may be innocent, but they are not equal. One side deserves empathy, while the other side deserves to be killed in the name of quote-unquote self-defense. That is the message that has come from these events. That for one group of people to exist, the other has to be erased. A convenient narrative for any oppressor to push forward to justify their war crimes. You see, we can all have opinions and debates about culture, politics, and religion. We can agree to disagree on a lot of things. But when the debate becomes about truth, when the evidence of truth exists and is publicly available to the world, evidence that we know discredits a narrative that has been constructed to justify a literal genocide, evidence that today is shadow banned, censored, silenced, and there is no outrage for that, when that reality is not even acknowledged, we go into dangerous territory that becomes very difficult to come back from. It becomes a fight to be seen. And in this case, a fight against selective empathy at the risk of history repeating itself. And history is, as it always does, repeating itself. You see, to tell or hear a story without context robs you of the opportunity to understand and arrive at your own conclusion of what the truth is. It intentionally is carefully constructed to limit your ability to question and can result into falling into a trap of dogma, a set of principles or truths set by an authority as unequivocally true. There's no room for argument. Again, it's a convenient tactic for oppressive regimes. Add on to that using religion as bait to evoke a sense of emotion to drive nationalism, and there you have it, a justification for genocide brought to you by the creators of colonialism. I encourage everyone listening to educate themselves on the history of the region before jumping to conclusions or convenient biases around what is happening. And the reason I encourage you to educate yourself on the history and not rely on one person, myself included, is because I am confident that while the content you may have been served may be biased or swayed in a particular direction, the history and chronological facts that have led us to where we are today are clearly documented and widely available to everyone across the globe for anyone to have access to. You just have to want to find it. You need to ask questions. And they don't even have to be good questions. They can be basic. Start with what, why, and how. I promise you that the rabbit hole of answers will lead you down a path of education you probably won't find referenced in today's headlines. Edward Said, a Palestinian-American academic, literary critic, and activist, wrote on the topic a lot. When it comes to critical thinking, he wrote a great book called Representations of the Intellectual. And he says, "The central fact for me is, I think, that the intellectual is an individual endowed with a faculty for representing, embodying, articulating a message, a view, an attitude, a philosophy, or opinion too, as well as for a public. And this role has an edge to it and cannot be played without a sense of being someone whose place is to publicly raise embarrassing questions, to confront orthodoxy and dogma rather than to produce them, to be someone who cannot easily be co-opted by governments or corporations and whose raison d'être is to represent all those people and issues that are routinely forgotten or swept under the rug. The intellectual does this on the basis of universal principles, that all human beings are entitled to expect decent standards of behavior concerning freedom and justice from worldly powers or nations, and that deliberate or inadvertent violations of these standards need to be testified and fought against courageously." So, in an attempt to contribute my voice to what will continue to be an ongoing conversation for the world, I'd like to focus on three considerations. And I challenge you to think about how they apply in the conversations you are having within your own communities. And if you are not having conversations about what is happening in Palestine within your communities, if you are not talking about this or other injustices that are happening in other places around the world, then I urge you to change your community. You need new friends. Because your silence on the matter and your privilege of getting to ignore or decide that the topic of injustice isn't a priority for you because it doesn't affect you directly, then you are a contributing factor to the world losing its sense of humanity. The three considerations I would like to address are the importance of acknowledgement, the need for representation, the reality of a choice. Acknowledgement is the act of recognizing or admitting the truth or validity of something. Now, when I say acknowledgement, it does not imply that a confirmation from any specific party is going to provide the necessary validation for something to be true. We have well over enough well-documented evidence of 75 years worth of proof to make a case for the Palestinian cause. But in order to move forward with any sort of conversation around this topic, there has to be a clear acknowledgement of everything that is going on today. And the reason that I start with this point is because the Palestinian cause and Israel's consistent oppression of the Palestinian people, with the support of the United States and other Western countries, is a masterclass in gaslighting. Because to say that they have been able to get away with literal murder leaves out the worst part of it, and it is their adamancy around lying, covering up, or simply denying what so many of us know to be true. I'm referring specifically to the crimes against the populations of Palestinians that lived peacefully in Palestine, a population made up of Jewish, Christian, and Muslim people pre-1948 who were either killed or forced out of their homes and into diaspora, many of which resulted in generations of grandchildren, like myself, whom have had to deal with the consequences of assimilating to new cultures that accepted them into their own countries under the naive guise of an eventual return. A return that in most cases cannot happen today because of the settlements that have been built on top of existing homes or land that was stolen. Homes that some Palestinians still possess deeds or keys to. Hence, the symbolism of the key that is used in many campaigns globally. The key is referenced in art, literature, and political activism as it symbolizes the aspirations of many Palestinians to return to the homes and lands that were lost during the Nakba in 1948. Acknowledgement of the countless illegal war crimes that have been consistently committed in the name of an ideology that promotes the dehumanization of Palestinians, who have been robbed of their basic human rights and have been forced into an occupation under the guise of a quote-unquote democracy, where they are governed by Israeli military law versus the civil law and liberties that Israeli citizens enjoy. Citizens of the Zionist state are invited from all over the world and granted immediate citizenship, housing, and rights at the expense of a Palestinian family that Israel has deemed expendable. Acknowledgement that to criticize the Zionist government or movement, its unjust actions, its inhumane regime, and policies cannot be equated to the crimes of anti-Semitism that we all know unfortunately still exist today. Anti-Semitism can never be justified and should never be justified. But to conflate anti-Semitism with anti-Zionism and say that they are the same thing in order to move a racist ideology forward is a crime in itself. I would like to remind everyone that both Jews and Arabs are Semites. So to claim that legitimate evidence-based criticisms against a Zionist ideology is anti-Semitic is absolutely ridiculous. It is an argument that has emerged as a tool to conflate, distract, and intimidate anyone speaking out about Palestine. Acknowledge that. In fact, while we're on the train to commenting on ridiculous things that people have decided to bring into this conversation, apparently protesting for a ceasefire or being pro-Palestinian is currently also being deemed anti-Semitic, along with the usage of the phrase, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." The phrase is a campaign slogan that was developed in the 60s that was used to reference the locations of Palestinians from the Jordan River, where the occupied West Bank sits, to the Mediterranean Sea, where Gaza is, and all the Palestinians living in between. It means that for all the Palestinians who currently live under occupation, military law, or are being terrorized by the settlers or living within the confines of a prison-like wall, deserve basic human rights and freedom. Freedom of which they currently do not have. So to associate that with someone deciding that a slogan about freedom could hypothetically mean something racist against Jews is in itself anti-Semitic, against Arabs. It has absolutely nothing to do with being Jewish or Muslim or Christian for that matter. Arabs are also Semites, and calling for the freedom and liberation of the currently occupied Palestinian people is not anti-Semitic. I was having a conversation with someone recently who was attempting to show support for the cause. And when I expressed my pain around the current genocide, he interrupted me to say, "Oh, no, Dana, you shouldn't use that word." And I asked why, and he responded with, "That's only one perspective, and it's political." I won't go into how the conversation ended, but let me be clear about the definition of genocide. It is the deliberate killing of a large number of people from a particular nation or ethnic group, with the aim of destroying that nation or group. If you need more context on this, please rewind the episode to the beginning, or open up a social media channel. We are witnessing a genocide that is happening live. There is no argument or debate to be had. Acknowledge that. Acknowledge that. Use the correct terminology. Language matters. Next is the need for representation. One of the questions I get asked quite a bit is around what the quote-unquote solution should be for Palestine and Israel. I find that question incredibly problematic for a variety of reasons. The first being that it positions me, someone not living in Palestine or under occupation, to speak from a place of privilege on something I know nothing about. Palestinian voices have for the longest time been silenced or ignored when it comes to deciding what it is that they need and what the quote-unquote solution should be. And while I will always, always, always raise my voice in support of their liberation, it is my responsibility, it is our responsibility collectively, to also amplify the voices of Palestinians on ground who are experiencing this injustice firsthand. And if I, as a Palestinian, can say and understand that to support them means that I need to do my part without becoming that central voice, that is the same type of thinking that applies to allies within non-Palestinian communities. We are all on the same team here. And to those whom, with the best of intentions, are being vocal about the cause and using their platforms to educate others on the genocide and are on ground doing the work and protesting for a ceasefire and a free and liberated Palestine, I thank you, I see you, and I appreciate you. We all do. But you need to also understand that to truly show allyship or support is to amplify existing voices that need to be heard, that deserve to be heard. It cannot be the diaspora community or the international community that takes center stage here. Palestinians in Palestine lead and we follow. They are fighting for their lives, and it is so important to be humble in our support by listening to what they need and not imposing what we think they need. And that has been the biggest learning I have come away with from this entire experience. From the doctors I've spoken to the humanitarian organizations that are working on getting support into Gaza and the West Bank. So when we do the work moving forward, while it is important to educate, protest, boycott, and participate in any and all initiatives that support the cause to free Palestine, a large part of that is to amplify voices like Wael Dahtour, the 53-year-old journalist and father whose wife and kids were murdered by the IOF and more recently wounded and injured in an Israeli strike that has somehow, amidst almost losing his life multiple times, has not stopped reporting on the unfolding daily events in Gaza. Plesti Al-Aqad, the 22-year-old content creator and journalist whom, while covering the daily brutalities of the genocide, tries to find ways to highlight the love and joy that still exists within the hearts of Palestinian people. Bisan Aoudeh, the 24-year-old aspiring filmmaker turned journalist who starts every video with a reminder that she is still alive to provide the world with some sort of context of what is happening within the displaced communities. Martez Aziza, the 24-year-old photographer who has been risking his own life to provide the world with coverage of the casualties and atrocities of the genocide while doing things like rescuing injured babies and rushing them to hospitals between bombings. Aboud Battah, Abdurrahman Battah, the 17-year-old self-proclaimed best journalist in the world whose unbreakable spirit hasn't been tainted by the occupation and possesses a smile that speaks volumes to the resilience of the world's most courageous people. Saleh Jafarawi, with the voice that has captivated a nation. Hind Khderi, the journalist. Dua Al-Baz, the photographer. Ahmed Hijazi, the content creator. And more recently, the nine-year-old aspiring journalist, Lema Jamous, that has captivated our hearts in her interviews and coverage. And many, many, many more who truly represent the voices of the generation that have so much more to teach the world about what it means to have courage and faith. The last point I want to share is around this idea of choice. The reality that we actually do have a choice today in how we move forward from an experience like this, because if there's one thing we can all collectively agree on, is that going back to the way things were before October 7th is not an option. The world has changed. I have changed. You have changed. The narrative has shifted, and we are seeing the unfolding of a new generation of voices that will not tolerate the status quo. And I am a strong believer that with intention or will, combined with commitment, change is possible. Throughout the past few weeks, I've had the privilege to speak to people that have been playing a direct role with helping people on ground. The first of which was Dr. Hussam Zumlot, who currently serves as the ambassador and head of the Palestinian mission to the UK. There were a few takeaways from the event that I would like to paraphrase. These comments were addressing us as the diaspora or the global community supporting Palestine. Firstly, depression is a luxury that we just cannot afford. We have a duty to move forward for Palestine, and we have a responsibility to keep moving forward for them and support in every way possible. Second, racism is racism, and it applies to any ethnicity or religion. Palestinians have learned firsthand what this kind of hate can do, which is why it is important for us to maintain a moral high ground and not feed into the lies that are there to dehumanize us. We need to reject racism, anti-Semitism, and hate in all its forms against any group of people. We are a people who will live with the collective memory of what has happened to us. There is a generation of children in Gaza and the West Bank that are facing traumas that are unimaginable to the rest of us. How are we going to teach children not to let that hate take over them? How are we going to ensure that the trauma they went through can be turned into a positive force? And lastly, he ended on a positive note of, we, the Palestinian nation, are a great nation. Between our level of education, contributions to humanity, and achievements around the world, we do have it in us to rebuild the capacity required for Palestine from the inside out. We have what it takes, and we have it in us to support our people to make Palestine an exceptional nation. Dr. Ghassan Abu Sitteh, a prominent surgeon from Gaza that has played a key role in surgeries for children, said something in an interview that really stuck with me. When the audience asked how they could help Palestine now, he requested for us, the people outside Palestine, to do what they, the people inside Palestine, cannot do because they're busy trying to survive this. And it was to think of solutions for how to move forward and what happens post-ceasefire. How can we help them later? How can we think for them later? How can we help them rebuild their community from within? What can we do to empower Palestinians? Whether it's through infrastructure, economy, healthcare, education, technology, whatever it may be. How can you, as a listener today, contribute to the cause beyond just raising your voice? Because when you make a choice to support something, it requires a second choice to be made, which is to commit to it. When I sit back and think about this, especially on the days where I feel especially powerless, I think about my own struggles in life, and more recently this past year. And after seeing the resilience and faith of the Palestinian people over the course of the past 2 months, I've learned that people do not understand their own power and capacity until they are faced with a choice. Look, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I'm not angry or outraged about what's happening, what has been happening. The occupation of Palestine has been the only narrative I have known since I was born. But it's important to understand that the era of being bystanders to the status quo is long gone. And today, we are empowered and possess resources, not just in the form of tools, but to each other. People all over the world are one click away, literally. We do have the power to make a difference today, and it is important and necessary to do that. The politics of the situation is a whole other issue and requires much more context because while I may have addressed acknowledgement here as a key to becoming a contributing advocate to the cause, when it comes to moving forward from the politics of the occupation, it would be full accountability for the crimes committed that would be the starting point of any sort of conversation. That being said, I'd like to end on a takeaway that resonated with me the most in my relationship to the cause and being Palestinian. As most of the world already is, I'm in awe of their courage and resilience. I am in complete admiration of their faith in God and their commitment to their home and to their liberation. It is so powerful to watch. It is so powerful to hear and see. They have a way of just making you believe. Believe in hope. Believe in love. Believe in humanity. To dare to even believe in change. Believe in something that is so much bigger than all of this. And in getting to know these people through social media, by consuming their content, hearing their stories, watching their pain, but also witnessing their unbreakable spirit, there is a consistent message that I come away with. Palestinians don't want you to forget them. They don't spend their time asking for handouts or money or special favors. If you really listen, they really don't ask for anything material from us. Although you would think that they have every reason to, no, they don't ask for material things. They ask for us to remember their stories. They ask that while tomorrow may not be promised for them, that we keep their legacy alive. We keep their stories alive. We keep them alive in the stories we continue to tell for generations to come. If you are interested in helping Palestine, there are three things you can do immediately today. One, follow, support, and share content around the cause. Don't stop sharing. Don't stop posting. Second, donate to reliable organizations that are using the funds to help. And lastly, find a local community that you can actively gather around with and think of ways to contribute to the rebuilding of Palestine, whether it be Gaza or the West Bank, following the ceasefire. What are creative ways you can make a difference as a community? Remember, there is no act too small. I will be sure to share a list of Palestinian content creators to follow and support, along with reliable charities and medical organizations to donate to. I encourage you all to do your own vetting before donating any sort of money. As always, I want to thank you for the privilege of your time. I appreciate you listening to what I had to share, and I hope you found something to consider.